Campus FM presents Talking Heads Season 3, brought to you by students of the International Master in Adult Education for Social Change. Right to choose if and when I want to have a baby. If your mother had aborted you, would you be here today? A person's bodily autonomy applies to everything in their body. A right over everything in their body or what happens to their body. Abortion is murder. Abortion is a sin. You don't know the future of a child, and so how do you end it before it starts? Now, these and many more are some of the arguments that you would hear during any pro-life, pro-choice advocacy or debate. Now, this keeps intensifying with different cards being thrown into the mix, from scientific facts to religious prohibitions, personal choice, the right to life, as well as what that life actually means. And yes, as you might have well guessed, this episode is on the ever-so-sensitive issue of abortion. Now, what really is the bone of contention here? Is there a middle ground? Should there be one? And if so, how do we reach it, or can we? This is Talking Heads Season 3. My name is Solis Rose Quarte, and I'm here with my co-host.
Oh, yeah, that's me, Milton Resendez.
Yes, that's you, Milton. So,
hello. As Solis Rose has rightly said, the topic of abortion is quite a sensitive one. In most cases, due to the legal implications of it. So, for instance, there are currently 26 countries where all abortions are illegal, no matter how the pregnancy came about. So, Egypt, Iraq, El Salvador, and Malta. Others, such as Ghana, Mexico, Nigeria, Poland, Liechtenstein, Maldives, and many others, have certain specific conditions under which the abortion can be resorted to. Today, we will look at the issue of legalization, regarding the pro-choice stance and why there seems to be growing support for it in some areas, but a decline in others. The United States, Alabama, for instance.
Just happened. Well, to help us delve into this topic, we have in the studio Andrea Dibben. She is a resident academic with the Department of Social Policy and Social Work at the University of Malta. She has been the chairperson of the Women's Rights Foundation since 2016. She worked as a social worker with socially disadvantaged mothers, asylum seekers, and persons experiencing housing problems. Andrea served on the National Commission for the Promotion of Equality. That's the NCPE from 2010 to 2013. She also served as the director of the University of Malta's Cotoneda Resource Center in its inception year in 2012. And is currently the chairperson for the same center. Andrea is also a member of the President's Foundation National Observatory for Living with Dignity. She's also married and a proud mother of two beautiful children. She smiled when I said that. Hello, Andrea. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Solis and Milton, and thank you for inviting me.
All right.
Well, glad you're here. So, let's get right into it. Let's start by clearing the air on this. When most hear pro-choice, they actually hear pro-abortion. Is there a difference? And if so, what do you think has fed into this misconception?
Oh, yeah, of course there is a difference. Ultimately, the whole idea of pro-choice, that it is about a woman's choice to go on with her pregnancy or to terminate that pregnancy, or to give the baby up for adoption, whatever those choices may be, the idea of pro-choice is that a woman actually has a right to choose. If you had to say pro-abortion, it would mean like somebody is actually recommending that pregnant women, especially in certain circumstances, would be better off if they had an abortion, which is completely not the case when you have a pro-choice position. The pro-choice position is very clearly about a woman being able to decide for herself what she does with that pregnancy. Now, obviously, the idea of pro-abortion mostly comes from what we call anti-choice propaganda that try to position the pro-choice movement as trying to promote abortion, which is definitely not the case. In fact, many of the people in the pro-choice movement are very, very active in supporting mothers as well when they decide to have children. And they're part of women's rights movement, so obviously they are very much in the active in supporting all other sorts of women's rights issues, as well as promoting sex education and access to contraception to actually prevent abortion. It's not like we want people to have abortions. Actually, most of the pro-choice movement wants to promote especially sex education and access to contraception to actually prevent women from having to resort to terminating pregnancies.
All right. So.
And supporting those women who choose to become mothers as well.
Mm. I see. So what, I mean, besides you mentioned the pro-life propaganda aspect of it. Mm-hmm. Now, what exactly do you think is the reason why there's this strong resistance against the pro-choice stance? What do you think has contributed majorly to that?
Yes, I mean, I would say that most of it comes from religious conviction throughout the ages, but also the belief. It could be, I mean, you don't have to be religious to be anti-choice.
But that doesn't seem like that's the case.
There are some people who are atheists. There are some people who are humanists who are still against abortion. There are some people, I mean, you don't have to actually personally approve of abortion morally to be pro-choice either, because there are some people who would say, I am personally against abortion because of my religious convictions, because of my moral beliefs, but I understand that that is my personal position, but still I don't want abortion to be illegal in a country because I understand that other women might have different beliefs. So that is a very, very acceptable position, and many people actually have that position. Those people would still be called pro-choice. Mm-hmm. Okay. They are still part of the pro-choice movement because they would be personally against abortion, but politically they would be pro-choice because they would believe that if abortion is illegal, mostly for this reason, it does not stop abortion, but it actually makes abortion unsafe for women. Because as we know, the law does not actually stop women from having abortion. It just makes abortion unsafe wherever it is illegal. But where does it come from? I think it's a whole mixture of different values, different moral beliefs, the fundamental kind of belief is that a human being becomes a person from fertilization, from conception, and that embryo and fetus should be given the right to ultimately be born and live as other human beings. I think that is where the fundamental division comes.
I think the question is kind of more like, how do we put like somebody's choice above like the value of a human life?
Okay. Yes. In fact, the main argument from the anti-choice movement is that you wouldn't discuss legalizing murder. So the way they see it is that abortion would be equivalent to murdering a person. So that is where the argument comes from, the anti-choice perspective. Of course, from the pro-choice perspective is that this is not a universal fact. This is a belief, and many different religious beliefs have different positions when it comes to when personhood starts.
All right.
Okay. Now let's delve into the Maltese perspective. Mm-hmm. As Milton read out in the introduction, Malta is one of the very few countries, actually the only European country, and I think you mentioned the Vatican, that actually has abortion as illegal, irrespective of the circumstances surrounding the pregnancy. Yes. Now, how, with a Maltese perspective, what do you think, besides religion, is the main problem, the main reason why it's so, and I've heard the arguments on radio, I've seen it on social media, so I know it's a very strong and passionate argument against the pro-choice movement. What is the problem exactly?
Okay, so basically, I think Malta has a very, very strong identity, a strong religious identity. Although church attendance and religious beliefs have been decreasing, yet abortion is that one issue that kind of defines us, as it kind of has a national identity in a way, that Maltese are pro-life. You know, it's something that has been there, and when even when Malta joined the European Union, for example, in 2004, this was one of the main fears, that now that we're going to join the EU, there's going to be this imposition from, it's like this invasion, from conceptual invasion, from other more liberal countries to actually impose their views on us. And in fact, it was something that was discussed, and it's actually in the accession treaty that the European Union cannot in any way ever force Malta to introduce abortion. Mm-hmm. I think it also has something to do with the importance that is still given in our country to motherhood as well. So abortion is seen as kind of the antithesis to that. It's like every child is a blessing. Women should receive motherhood as something positive. And so actually going against that notion, it's in fact many of the rhetoric is actually, and it's actually showing surprise. Oh, are these women mothers? They should be ashamed of themselves, you know, they are mothers and they have these beliefs. It's because it's like abortion goes against killing your own child. It's like killing your own child goes against this idea that motherhood is a blessing. So that is, I think that is very strong as well. Women's rights here, even though we have been improving, have lagged behind. So, for example, Malta, when it comes to even the way we look at women, things like sexual harassment, domestic violence, etc. For example, Malta has one of the highest rates. It's 47%. It's not low, of people who believe that women exaggerate claims of rape. So this is the highest in all of the EU. And you have around 20% of public as well, the highest rate in the EU, that believe that sometimes rape is provoked by women because of the clothes they wear, for example. So these are kind of misogynistic attitudes, and this patriarchy is still very, very strong. And so controlling women's bodies, controlling, so like don't open your legs, it's very much linked to sexuality as well. So all of these different elements then feed into this discourse against abortion. But I say that most of it also comes because from a very, very young age in the education system, in all our institutions, and this is what we are seeing mainly when we go out there, there is a lot of ignorance on the subject. The subject is not tackled in our education system. All the messages that are received are from a very emotional anti-choice perspective, and there is no rational engagement with the subject. There is no philosophical discussion of the issues, etc., at no level. And so you just grow up with this belief, abortion is murder, and only when you grow up, some people then start realizing, listen, there is another side to the story. There are different women. Abortion still happens. Most of us know someone who have had an abortion anyway. People just travel to Sicily. They travel to England. They nowadays, they even buy pills from the internet. And so the viewpoint only changes when people usually grow and start going out of the country and seeing a different reality as well. But of course, the majority of people then still hold anti-choice perspectives.
Okay. Now, would you, you've already described Malta as having the reputation of being pro-life.
We are seen as the last fortress, even like internationally, especially after Ireland's referendum, international pro-life organizations, like even from the United States, from everywhere, their attention now has focused on Malta, like you are the last fortress, you know, like keep it that way.
But so, is Malta really, really in on the ground, really pro-life?
We don't know in reality, because we don't know the exact numbers. I mean, the polls, the last poll by Malta Today showed that Malta on the ground is pro-life. However, most of the times people are pro-life until something happens to them. I've had a lot of stories from women who tell me, I was actually against abortion. I was never pro-choice, but then the situation happened to me. And of course, I started seeing things from a different angle. So it's when things happen to them as well. There is a lot of fear. There is a lot of fear because the pro-choice position up until 2 years ago, nobody would dare say they are pro-choice. Yes. Oh, wow. Well, maybe wow. even 1 year, I would say. Up until 1 year.
It's a very, very fresh baby.
Nobody would dare say they are pro-choice publicly. People are still scared nowadays. Like, if you work in any public institution, you have teachers, doctors, health workers, they wouldn't voice their opinion in their place of work. Or with their families sometimes as well. So even these kind of polls, if they take place by phone, for example, and you receive that phone call, you would be scared to actually give your real position, because you might be scared that it will somehow come out. So we don't really know in secret spaces mm-hmm. what the situation really is. I think it's about time that after some time we might actually have another poll.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, I wanted to ask, so what is Malta's stance on contraception? Because, for example, it's been shown that
yes.
countries that have contraception, the
yes.
rate of abortion actually falls.
Yes.
Countries that have sexual education that isn't focused exclusively on abstinence and actually teaches how to use contraception mm-hmm. effectively, abortion falls in mm-hmm. those countries. Mm-hmm. So what is Malta's stance on contraception? Is it like they're
yes.
pro?
Okay.
I mean, they would be, right?
I was
going
to say
I have an idea
because I have a personal experience. But
okay.
Let's move on.
Yes. Well, okay. So let's put the facts. As you said, the countries that unfortunately law does not stop abortion. It has been proven very clearly that the only thing that actually reduces the rates of abortion is comprehensive sex education and comprehensive access to contraception. In fact, in all those countries where abortion is legal and easily available, the rates have been falling due to this issue. And in countries where abortion is completely illegal, like many countries in South America and some countries in Africa, abortion rates are still very, very high, mm-hmm. irrespective of the law, because access to contraception is also limited. Now, Malta, we have a sexual health policy, we have a sexual health strategy, we have guidelines on relationship and sex education in schools, which are comprehensive, they're not abstinence-based at all, but this is all on paper.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to practice, when it comes to on the ground, we have very different experiences. For example, even in terms of, we don't have any contraception clinics, for example, or family planning clinics. The only, there is one in, it's a GU clinic. So it's there to test for STDs, but they would also give information about contraception. It is found at Mater Dei Hospital. So it's in the national hospital, in the community centers, in the health centers. You don't find any of this. Contraception is not free, so it's quite expensive. Some forms of contraception can be very expensive. In terms of access and education, we know that young people in Malta, and even older people, there was a survey in 2012, have one of the lowest use of contraception. In fact, we have high rates of STDs, we have high rates of teenage pregnancies, so on the ground, there is a lot to be done. The morning after pill has only been legalized in the past, like 2 years ago. Again, it was Women's Rights Foundation, a women's organization that had to fight for it. There was a lot of discussion and a lot of debate because a lot of people were claiming that the morning after pill is abort efficient. Nowadays, access to the morning after pill is still quite limited because you have a number of pharmacists who still don't sell, they claim, you know, conscientious objection, so they don't sell the pill. So there's a lot of work to be done on that area as well. Yes, I think I have to make this point. When we talk about abortion, you cannot talk about abortion without talking about sex education mm-hmm. and access to contraception. I think sexual and reproductive health and rights, it's like a chain, and you have to talk about them in a comprehensive way.
And you think Malta is not really doing that?
Of course not. No, it's not. And we have a lot to work in that area.
Mm. Now, for instance, like in Ghana, abortion is illegal, but there are exceptions. Mm-hmm. You have, you know, rape, incest, if the mother has a mental disability, if the fetus mm-hmm. or the mother is threatened in any way, you can abort the baby. And there are legal clinics that you can mm-hmm. do that at. Even without those complications, there's still some legal clinics that you can have legal abortions. The issue rather is more of how to monitor these clinics if they become legalized. So mm-hmm. how does Malta have in place the monitoring mechanisms to be able to, we are fighting for legalization, right? Mm-hmm. But does Malta have in place the monitoring mechanisms to ensure that when and if it becomes legal, you don't have a crisis on your hands in the form of quack doctors and people just doing whatever they
want? I think in terms of our national health system and in terms of the way health is regulated, I don't think that the problem is now. It's not if it was legalized. I mean, if it was legalized, there would be a clear framework of how and when it would be accessed. Mm-hmm. I think the problem is now, mm-hmm. Because obviously now we don't know what is happening. Even though it's illegal and there's a criminal part of it, we don't know what's going on. So we know for sure that women are receiving abortion pills from the internet. We know that there are some people who can access medication that is available for other reasons in this country, and they use it for abortion purposes. We know that people go to Sicily, to illegal clinics in Sicily, not legal ones, even to apartments where they access abortion there. Yeah. There are rumors that there have been even surgical abortions happening here, you know, at home, self-induced, etc. So that is the situation now. But we don't know the extent of this. We hear sometimes hushed stories from health professionals who tell us about situations of people who come in their emergency services with certain situations where it is very clear that they have tried something. Mm. But it's all hushed, because otherwise they would have to report them and it would be a criminal. There have been cases in the past 2 years where women have been taken to court and have been charged for abortion as well.
Right. So what I was basically mm-hmm. trying to ask is, in advocating for yes. the legalization of abortion, is there a simultaneous advocacy for proper monitoring mechanisms
to be put in place? At this point, we're not there yet. But once it would be, I would assume it would be part of the national health system. But I don't know when that will happen. I see it as very far away at this point.
What do you perceive would be the worst case scenario if abortion is not legalized in Malta anytime soon?
Well,
most bizarre case you can think of.
Well, I think the worst case scenario, and I hope it never happens, would be a situation that, like what happened in Ireland with Savita. You know, that would be the worst case scenario, where you would have women who die because of the situation. That is the worst of the worst, I would say. It hasn't happened, and hopefully it will never happen. But at the same time, you have situations which happen already, where there are mental health issues of women who are forced to carry their pregnancy, and we don't know if there has been suicides or anything like that would be related to that situation. We don't know this, and that is also a worst case situation. Another worst case situation, especially now that we have, I mean, Maltese community has become very diverse, is that you would have so far, there are these safety valves, you know, women travel. And we also have services of abortion support network who actually help women to travel. But those women, the poor ones, the disadvantaged ones, those who are here illegally, who can't leave the island, might resort to dangerous methods. And that is, I would say, the worst case scenario, where you have the women who are the most vulnerable, who are suffering, and who could potentially even endanger their physical health and their lives because of the situation.
So we're running out of time, but I have a question about counseling. So in countries where abortion is legal, mm-hmm. they have counseling, like pre-abortion counseling.
Yes.
I think even here in Malta, there's like pre-morning after pill counseling?
No, not really.
Well, at least in practice.
And I mean, the pharmacist, yes. I mean, if you go to a pharmacist, it's not supposed to be counseling. They just ask you questions in terms of your health, you know, normal procedural questions related to taking medication. So it's not actually counseling in
All
that
right.
sense. No, but obviously the counseling that is available in Malta is only from a pro-life organization that actually counsels women who have a pregnancy crisis, which obviously would not include a pro-choice position. In terms of counseling, even though it's not illegal, but from a medical point of view, and from, so even like doctors, many are afraid to actually give the advice, if that is the best medical possibility, to actually access abortion in other countries. Some would, some wouldn't. So there are these fears. There's a lot of fears. There's what we call the chill factor. And nowadays I've had women who really wanted to discuss it with a psychologist, etc., and they couldn't. They were too scared. Nowadays the Abortion Support Network also offers, through BPAS, an organization in the UK, counseling on the phone for those who want to discuss the decision. So mm-hmm. at least there is that availability from the UK. It's in English, unfortunately. It's not in Maltese, of phone counseling.
All right. Well,
okay. Well, I'm just going to go through this very briefly. One thing I noticed when I was doing my research and the opposition, the pro-choice opposition, a lot of it came from men.
Yes.
Andrea?
Well, it is very symptomatic of a patriarchal society where men want to make decisions on women's bodies as well. Although there are many women who are leading the pro-life movement as well. So we cannot say it's just men.
Mm.
But we have seen this even in the United States, where many of the people who voted against the abortion legislation were actually men, and usually it's white men as well.
Yeah, so I think this isn't so much like a men versus women. It's more like
progressive. No, in fact, we have, at the same time, we also have many men who support the pro-choice movement as well.
Mm.
And we need them on our side. If there ever, I hope it doesn't come to that, but if there were ever a referendum, everybody would have a vote, not just women. So it's not something that, it's not about men and women, because men also have sisters and mothers and daughters. So it's about everyone.
Of course.
It is indeed about everyone. And
of course, pregnant people don't just include women, but also include trans men and mm-hmm. gender non-binary persons as well.
Yes, indeed. And on that note, I'd like to thank Andrea Dibben for joining us on the show today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
With this, we conclude this program. We hope you learned as much as we have. If you're interested in studying in the International Master in Adult Education for Social Change, please go to www.gla.ac.uk. There you can check the requirements and more information regarding our program. To follow the journey of the third cohort of iMask, visit our blog, imask-unmasked.squarespace.com. My name is Solis Rose Corte, and I've been here with
Milton Resendezvera.
Good day.
Good day.